Good morning, everyone. It's lovely to see every one of you here today on this beautiful spring day in Central Texas. I think we've finally hit spring. It went back and forth for a few days, but I think we're at spring now. But please know that every one of you is welcome here. Wherever you are in your emotional, your spiritual journey, you are welcome in this religious community. You are welcome here today. So please rise in body or spirit and join me in the first hymn, hymn number 6, Just As Long As I Have Breath, hymn number 6.
Jean McDermott will light our chalice this morning. Please join me in saying our chalice lighting words printed in your order of worship. With the kindling of this flame, we affirm our commitment to accept life's gifts with grace and gratitude, and to use them to bless the world in the spirit of love. My name is Karen Wellman, and I'm this morning's lay worship leader. Welcome to Wildflower Church, where we have chosen a heritage that places the final authority for religious questions not on any particular book of scriptures, not in an institution or church, but with each individual based on our own conscience and lived experiences. We explore important issues in a caring community, united by shared values rather than by shared theological opinions. I want to give a special welcome to our first time and returning visitors. After the service, please join us in the community room in the building to your left for coffee and community and talk. We want to get to know you and answer any questions that you have. Let's take a moment now to welcome the people sitting near us, especially those you may not know well. Please see your order of worship for our responsive reading. I will read the plain text, and you will respond with the text in italics. We would go deeper.
We would become selves we cannot even imagine today.
We would become courageous.
We would grow to delight in congregations filled with different perspectives.
We would know unutterable joy.
May we go deeper.
May our May our learning know no end. May we see the beauty in each other's faces. While spirituality is intangible, we live in a very tangible world. This church would not thrive without the monetary support of its members. We are going to have the offering now. Please give as generously as you're able. If you are visiting us with us for the first time, please let the basket pass, as your presence here is gift enough. The offering will now be given, and thank you for your generosity.
My name is Kathy Kramer, and I'm this year's president of the board. Here at Wildflower, we believe that community matters. Our mission is growing spiritually together, spreading love, justice, and joy. Here are a few ways we're doing that. First of all, unrelated to any of that, there's some keys that were found over there. So if you're looking for your keys, they'll be in Brian's office after the service. First, love. Our church t-shirts tell the world that we answer the call of love. We answer the call of love. We'll be placing another order of shirts in 2 weeks, so if you'd like one, please let me know. See your order of service for more details. Next, justice. You'll hear more about the Puerto Rican Cultural Center during our special offering, but just an added note that they are hosting an Earth Day picnic next Sunday, April 22nd at 2 p.m. after our own Earth Day service. Members of Wildflower's Climate Action Team will be helping out with that. If you'd like to volunteer or just want more info, you can see Susan Littman after the service, right there. More justice. Our house is a nonprofit that provides leadership training and opportunities to East Austin teens. We became connected to Our House through our Building the Beloved Community program, which has us reaching out to our neighbors and assisting them in their work. Our House is hosting a community cafe this Tuesday, April 17th at Travis High School, right across the street, and they need volunteers to make it a success. This is a great opportunity to get involved. See your order of service for more details, and there will be a sign-up sheet in the community room after the service. Finally, joy. It is a joy for me to invite Don and Marissa Cullen up for an announcement. I think.
So we're here to teach you guys a little simple ASL signs. and goodbye, finally. We're just keeping it simple for today. Do you want to go ahead and start? So this is hello. How are you? Hello. How are you? Okay. I'm good. Thank you. How are you? I'm fine. 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 And a sign for good looks like this. Good. I'm good. I'm fine. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you as well. Nice to meet you. Bye.
Just make sure you practice with each other and yeah, keep it up. Thanks for everything.
Thank you, Don and Marissa. I expect all of you to practice after the service with the Cullens. Walk up to them and say, hi, how are you? Thank you.
I'd like to invite everyone, young in body or spirit, up for the time for all ages. And I'll be practicing too, but that will be later in front of the mirror. Good morning, everyone. Oh, come on, come on. Please have a seat where you're comfortable. Thank you all for coming forward today. And today I have a book, but today's service we're going to be talking about spirituality. And that's a kind of complicated thing. And don't worry if you don't understand it, because most of us don't understand it either. But one of the things I do think spirituality about is about ideals and values. And this morning's book is a great book, and I just got it this week, and it's called What Do You Do With an Idea? And it's by Kobe Yamada and Mae Besom. Make it, did you say?
I know, I have heard it before.
You have heard it? Well, don't give the plot away.
I'm just going to say it's a really good
book. It's a great book, isn't it? So I'm going to read it to you. And those who have read it, just follow along, and you can add your thoughts about the book at the end, okay? But thank you. One day, I had an idea. Where did it come from? Why is it here, I wondered. What do you do with an idea?
You make it.
At first, I didn't think much of it. It seemed kind of strange and fragile. I didn't know what to do with it, so I just walked away from it. I acted like it didn't belong to me. And for those you can't see, it's an egg with legs and a crown on it. That's the idea. Isn't that the perfect image for an idea, though? But it followed me. I worried what others would think. What would people say about my idea? I kept it to myself. I hid it away and didn't talk about it. I tried to act like everything was the same as it was before my idea showed up. But once a good idea shows up, nothing's ever the same. But there was something magical about my idea. I had to admit I felt better and happier when it was around. It wanted food, it wanted to play, actually, it wanted a lot of attention. It grew bigger, and we became friends. It's carrying the idea now. I showed it to other people, even though I was afraid of what they would say. I was afraid if people saw it, they would laugh at it. I was afraid they would think it was silly. And many of them did. They said it was no good. They said it was too weird. They said it was a waste of time and that it would never become anything. And at first, I believed them. I actually thought about giving up on my idea. I almost listened to the other people. But then I realized, what do they really know? This is my idea, I thought. No one knows it like I do. And it's okay if it's different and weird and maybe a little crazy. I decided to protect it, to care for it. I fed it good food. I worked with it. I played with it. But most of all, I gave it my attention. My idea grew and grew, and so did my love for it. I like the idea of being in bed with it. I built a new house, one with an open roof, where it could look up at the stars, a place where it could be safe to dream. I like being with my idea. It made me feel more alive, like I could do anything. It encouraged me to think big, and then to think even bigger. It shared its secrets with me. It showed me how to walk on my hands, because it said it's good to have the ability to see things differently. Who here can walk on their hands? Nobody. Well, you need to practice. There's your big idea.
No.
With your parents' permission, you can walk with your hands.
No.
No? Okay.
I've tried that like a million times now, and I always fall over, and the pillows don't help.
Yeah. Pillows are a good idea. I couldn't imagine my life without it. Then one day, something amazing happened. My idea changed right before my eyes. It spread its wings, took flight, and burst into the sky.
If you walk on your hands, if you fall, you will kill yourself.
Well, you may not kill yourself, but you might hurt yourself. You have to be careful walking on your hands. I don't know how to describe it, but when it went from being here to being everywhere, it wasn't just a part of me anymore. It was now a part of everything. And then I realized what you do with an idea. You change the world.
Hey, look at. No, wait. We didn't see a whole picture.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't show you the whole picture. I'm sorry, Rufus.
Everything has a crown.
So anything with a good idea has a crown. So what are your good ideas? What are your good ideas?
Cardboard boxes.
Cardboard boxes are good ideas. With lids?
I honestly don't know why, but whenever my parents have a cardboard box, I want it, and I don't even know what to do with it.
A lot of times when I give my...
5 years later, I make it into something because I had an idea.
A lot of times when I give my daughter the gift, she throws it away and plays with the box. I mean, that still happens. But, you know, that's be thinking about good ideas. And don't, you know, some people might say ideas are silly, but usually most creative ideas people think are silly until they become part of our lives. So thank you very much for listening, and it's time for your religious education class now. You can go with Miss Penny. Well, one of the ideas I had, which seemed like a good idea at the time, and now I'm having doubts, is I think our congregation needs to be fitter. We need more exercise. So this morning's prayer has actually got physical movements to go with it. So for those who feel up for it, you're invited to stand and find space. And even if you're not up for it, I would still invite you to do it. And this is to Gandhi's peace prayer. Some of you may know this. And we got a good example of this earlier when Marissa and Dawn came up to give us sign language. So Gandhi's peace prayer is, I offer you peace. I offer you love. I offer you friendship. I see your beauty. I hear your needs. I feel your feelings. My wisdom flows from a higher source. I honor that source in each of us. Let us work together for unity and love. Blessed be and amen. Invite you to rise in body or spirit. You were too quick. I told you we were going to get some exercise. And sing hymn number 8, Mother Spirit, Father Spirit. And we'll play it twice through. We'll sing it twice through.
There is a feeling that is hard to describe that I'm going to call the religious feeling, and I'm going to try to describe it. It's part certainty and inner peace. It's light and love. It is intensity and awe. The last time I felt that feeling, I was a teenager, heavily involved in my Christian youth group. I had been to a church sleepover the previous night, and one of the really popular girls from school had confessed salacious things, and we spent the whole night praying with her. The next day, I had the religious feeling. I was 100% certain of my beliefs. My skeptical self says I was tired, full of teenage hormones, high on the feeling of belonging, but when I'm honest with myself, I did feel something more. I understand how people use these feelings as the most compelling evidence of the supernatural and the spiritual. I've never since felt this exact feeling, but I do have a sense of wonder and awe at the mysterious process in our brains that produces it. I think it's important to find room in myself for a feeling of connection to something bigger. As an atheist who doesn't believe in spirits or souls, I've struggled to come to terms with how I fit into a community where these terms are part of our identity. As a child growing up evangelical Christian, my soul was something that needed saving. As a teenager, I rejected my childhood religion and an anger grew in me. I felt betrayed. I felt lied to. When I became a parent, I found that the anger in me wasn't a candle, it was a bonfire. I could not imagine using the trust of a child to teach belief. I could not imagine stifling the curiosity of a child by asking for faith. But now I'm facing a part of me, the sum of the intangibles of my mind. You might call it a spirit. I will agree to have that term with you. We can have it together. And it needs nourishing. I need to be around people who support me and comfort me, who challenge me and teach me. I also realize that while I have a duty to teach my children to inquire, examine, and search, I have to allow them to decide what they believe. I have to give them space to have beliefs. I have to find a place that's not just tolerance, it has to be acceptance. I have to confront the fact that if I agree with our principles, the free and responsible search for meaning, the inherent dignity and worth of all people, I have to have room in my life for people who have found other paths. I know I'm reaching for the low-hanging fruit here of spirituality, but I'm not very far down this road. I am maybe even still at the entrance, deciding if I want to even step onto the path. So I want to share something that gets me the closest I've felt to that feeling. And maybe you'll feel it too, maybe you won't. But whenever we're here and we're quiet, together, breathing together, I feel close to something outside of myself. So if everyone would breathe in with me and breathe out. Thank you.
On the third Sunday of the month, we here at Wildflower have a special offering. It's an offering that we give to a local nonprofit that we believe reflects our values and who runs programs in our local community. And today's offering goes to the Puerto Rican Cultural Center's Refugee Support and At-Risk Youth Initiative, which provides families displaced by Hurricane Maria. And it also gives at-risk youth scholarships. Now, many of us were shocked by Hurricane Katrina when it happened many years ago. We had Hurricane Harvey last year when we here at Wildflower had the restoration center that we ran in coordination with Faith Presbyterian and Counterbalance, where we served over 500 people. Sadly, the attention that went to both of those, albeit in case of Katrina very late, has not gone to Puerto Rico in the same way. Much of that island, much of that country is still without power and without basic necessities. Well, the Puerto Rican Cultural Center is trying to help with refugees from Hurricane Katrina. And I'd like to invite Dr. Ana Maria Takina Iru Minyard up, who's executive founder and artistic director at the Puerto Rican Cultural Center. She's going to talk about this program, and then she'll also be playing music for us as part of the offering. And your event, 2 o'clock next Sunday, April 22nd, we're encouraged to support. This is on Earth Day, after our Earth Day event. But this offering will be going on for the next 3 months as part of to support the Asterisk Unit initiative. So invite Doctor up now, please. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. I'm here to talk about the Puerto Rican Cultural Center, but when I get up and speak in front of a congregation of people, I always like to give you a message that you can take home for your own life. And so listen for that message. It's about the healing power of music and dance. I grew up in a pretty poor section of New York City. My parents were born in Puerto Rico, and they came in the time of history that you all know as West Side Story. And the neighborhood that I live, for anybody who knows J-Lo, I had to walk down her street every day on the way to school. And so that was the world that I lived in. And needless to say, it was very challenging, but I always had music and dance in my life, thanks to my parents and their strong cultural values. And fast forwarding to my adult life, after hard work and beautiful synchronicities and people who were there in the right place at the right time, I made it out of New York City, and I ended up with a PhD in computer engineering from Carnegie Mellon. And that's what brought me to Texas. And after I had my first baby, I realized that the world that I lived in, the things that made me strong, my son would never know. And so one of the reasons, the first reason why I started the Puerto Rican Cultural Center was so that my child and every child and any child could know the love and the healing power of music and dance and the love of a community, because I really believed that it takes a village to raise a child. Well, needless to say, in 1997, I started it as a nonprofit because I never wanted to make money out of doing this gift to the community. And we started with adult programs and soon after opened it up to families. And the one thing that I saw over and over again was that many times people would come through the door because they want to learn dance, they want to learn music, but sometimes people came through the door because they were hurting. There was something going on in their life, and they were looking for community. And what I found was, give me 30 minutes, music and dance, and people would blossom. They would smile. Those things that were heavy on their heart would just dissolve. And that's when I realized there was something really to this, and I started to study. What is it about music and dance that is healing people? And so I learned about the happy hormones. So if you don't know about the happy hormones, go and Google them, because it's a powerful thing for your own life, of how to cut the downward cycle of depression and et cetera. And so I was pretty grateful that I had this opportunity to help people, until one day I got very scared, because a student came to me and said, if it wasn't for your program, I had been planning to kill myself. And that made me afraid, because I realized, okay, I'm playing with fire. I'm giving dance lessons. And so I actually went back to school, and I got certified as a spiritual life coach. Because if nothing else, if it was a problem that we could move forward with together, I was there for them. And if it was something more than I can handle, I could recognize it and get them the right connections to the help that they needed. And so I began to use that. I remembered my own childhood and the grace that brought me to this place and out of New York City. And I started to look for at-risk youth, the kind that have talent and don't really have the financial means to take a class or be part of a community like ours, and I started looking for those kids where I could make a difference in their life and would give them scholarships to our cultural center. And still today we do that. We work with many AISD and KIPP schools to give scholarships to at-risk kids, knowing that as we gather around them as a loving community with music and dance, that we're giving them a moment in time where they feel like they have the love of the community and can overcome anything. And then, of course, September 20th hit, and my own island was devastated. It was weeks before we could talk to our families. And what we started doing as a community was, like a lot of people doing, getting trucks. We filled, our little cultural center filled a 24-foot truck of food and water and diapers and sent it through a military connection down to Brownsville, out on some choppers, and reached the mountains where the roads had disappeared down the mountain and the people were starving. But soon after, I started to see, as Puerto Rico started to get connected, there was no electricity, many small businesses folded, because how can you hold a biz? How can you have a business if you haven't had electricity in 3 months? And so what's happening is people are starting to leave the island in sadness, but it's a reality. If there's nothing for you, they're closing schools, there's no education for the children, there are no jobs to be had. The power still goes down, many hours, sometimes till the next day. So people are leaving, and they're coming to Florida and other places, and they're also coming to Texas. And I decided, rather than keep putting my energy on finding Pampers and putting them on a truck, I can help the people right here and give them scholarships to our cultural center so that they can find that loving community that are going to support them through this rough time and find them the healing power that they need through how they enjoy music and dance, and using my life coach skills to be able to help them connect. Because you got to believe, when people leave Puerto Rico, they're already depressed and desperate, and then they get here to Austin and realize that there's no miracle here waiting for them. And so it's very devastating. And so kind of connecting myself out in the community and finding those families that are literally on their last ray of hope, and showing them that there is a community here for them and people who love them and want to help. And above all, the healing power of the music and the dance that is releasing those happy hormones. And so I feel very grateful to be part of this mission. And I feel that everything that I experienced in my life brought me here today to share that with them. And so all I can do is feel grateful and humble that you're here listening to my story. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Anna Maria talked about the healing power of arts and dance and music. We also need to remember the healing power of community and generosity, and yes, money. Money is the capacity to do work. It can be thought of as energy. And we have a chance to be generous. So when I ask, when you think about this offering and supporting the fabulous work that we heard about at the Puerto Rican Cultural Center, look at the contents of your heart. Look at the contents of your soul. Look at the contents of your spirit, and not just the contents of your bank account. The morning offering will now be given and gratefully received.
This is a song dedicated to the four elements.
Kuyo abaka kakona. dako el guatu, ho guamikinagwe, guasabarakwe, ligaisa susuba, kako na huagia, babakutagwe, kako na huagia. Madre aguas puras, pipita roguari, na coquio sacuni, ni bagua huaquia. Madre aguas puras, poria tabe, na niki agüe, poani alima, cacona huaquia. Madre Pinagüey, Cacona Huaquilla, vive a tome.
I forgot to mention that I was singing the native language of my people in Taíno. That was taught to me by our chief, and the music is our mountain. This is our country music.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Takina Eru Maynard for blessing us with both your music and your presence and your message this morning. Thank you. I also like to thank Patrice King, who's a guest musician this morning, though she's been a guest before a number of times. Elke, our music director's off gallivanting somewhere in the hill country. So, and you'll be back next week as well. So those who love her, we get a double dose. I'd like to begin with a reading. And these are the words of the late feminist poet, Adrienne Rich. This is from Transcendental Etude. No one ever told us we have to study our lives. Make our lives a study as if learning natural history or music, that we should begin with the simple exercises first and slowly go on trying the hard ones, practicing till strength and accuracy becomes one with the daring to leap into transcendence. Practicing till strength and accuracy become one with the daring to leap beyond our imagination. And in fact, we can live like that. We take on everything at once, before we've even begun to read or mark time. We're forced to begin in the midst of the hardest moments in our lives, the ones already sounding as we are born. Well, Karen talked about the low-hanging fruits of spirituality. I'm going to go a little higher up the tree. And I've got into trouble with this before. My previous congregation at San Marcos, after I'd been there 2 months, someone left the congregation because they felt we were becoming too spiritual. And my board asked me about this at the time, and I said, I thought that was a great reason for someone to leave a church. So perhaps my response was not as gracious or as ministerial as it could have been, but I did meet with this person, and the person I would have described as a rich spiritual person. He was compassionate, he was loving, he was caring, but he could not get past that word spirit. When he heard spirit, he thought of ghosts. And I asked him, I said, do you think that's what I'm talking about from the pulpit when I talk about spirit or spiritual life? And he said, no, but I can't get past that. So spirituality is a tough topic, and it's confusing. But the one question I always have to ask us when we talk about spirit, when we talk about spiritual, do we really just think we are material beings? Is that all we have in our life? Are we just a lump of material that gained consciousness? As it's often said, human beings are just the universe becoming conscious of itself. Perhaps. But I think there's a lot of value in things that are not material that impact our lives. Those things like love, those things like values, those things like meaning, those things like purpose in our life that we explore and we find beyond the idea, beyond the material, those ideas that I would term spiritual. And when I do Time for All Ages, I talked about the world of ideas. And I love that story because it does a personification of ideas, and I think that is often the language of religion and spirituality. It's a language of symbols. It's a language of myths, and it's a language of metaphor. Now, I was quite relieved when I looked. If you look at the back page of your order of service, there's a famous seven principles. And one of them, the third one, does talk about spiritual growth. So I felt quite justified as a Unitarian Universalist minister talking about spirituality. And the third one is acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. But that's only one of the seven principles that talks about spirituality in that way specifically. But I want to congratulate Wildflower Church, because if you look at our mission, we talk about growing spiritually together, spreading love, justice, and joy. And our mission right below that is we nourish the growth of spirit in new ways. So we talk a lot about spirituality here, and as far as I know, no one's left yet. And I've been keeping an eye, no one left when I started speaking about this. The fact you showed up knowing that it was spirituality may have been part of the trick. But what do we mean? When we talk about spiritual growth, when we talk about spiritual exploration, what are we really talking about? And I've mentioned before that I believe the idea of religion is, do you believe in God, is one of the most useless questions you can ask someone. Because I don't think you can answer, do you believe in God? Because if you say yes, are you talking about theistic Christian God? Are you talking about the idea of the Hindu Brahman? Are you talking about the idea of Gaia, the planet? Which one of those are you saying yes to? And if you say no, are you saying no to wonder, awe, mystery, love, compassion? I mean, I love in Islam where they say there's 99 words for God, and they include words like hospitality and community. So I don't think God is important for a religious community, but I think this idea of spirituality, I'm going to do that most annoying thing that Unitarian Universalists do. I'm going to answer that question about what is spirituality with five other questions. And I think there's five fundamentally important questions to spirituality. And the first is, what does it mean to be human? The second is, what is your understanding of the divine, the sacred, the ultimate? The third is, what are your sources of meaning? Fourth is, what is your purpose as an individual, and what is our purpose as a community? And the fifth is, what is your ideas around birth and death? I think those are more meaningful, rich spiritual questions than do you believe in God? I think it's worth thinking, when we talk about being human, what do we mean? Much of our Unitarian tradition has been trying to undo the misunderstanding of Descartes, the French philosopher, when he said, I think, therefore I am. Because at that point, there was a separation of mind and body that's grown out of that, that has been really unhealthy. We are embodied beings, and the prayer I gave this morning with Gandhi, that was an embodied prayer. We often try and separate this idea of mind and body. We often separate the idea of spirit and soul from body. And I think what Unitarian, in its own way, has been trying to do is put that mind and body and spirit and soul back together as one being. And our Unitarian Universalist tradition often talks about the divine spark in each of us. There's part of the divine in each of us. There's part of God, as it were, in each of us. That's why we are sacred beings. That's why when we come together, we greet each other, the sacred spark within me, greeting the sacred spark within you. And it's that spark that animates life. That's what makes us, beyond, in my view, beyond this just this material being. There's too much about life that we do not understand, even with all the advances of science. I was pleased to hear Anna Marie's a computer engineer. So was I. So I believe in science. But I think there's so many things about science, like consciousness, that we do not understand. And there's something sacred about that which we do not understand, which gives our life meaning. And the English writer Ian McEwan mentions this about human beings. He says, "A person is above all a material and a spiritual thing that is easily torn and not easily mended." A human being is easily torn and not easily mended. And I think that's one of the reasons we seek out religious community. That's one of the ideas we seek questions. We're trying to piece ourselves back together because so much of life tears us apart. We heard about the hurricanes in Puerto Rico. We hear this about the bombings in Syria that happened on Friday. There's so much in life that's tearing human beings apart from who they are, tearing communities apart, tearing countries apart. And I think as religious beings, we are trying to mend this broken world. We are trying to heal an ill world. And I think that's when we get into the second question about the divine and the sacred. Those values, those actions, those driving forces that help us to pull community together, that help us to mend the broken world, I believe are sacred. I believe they're divine tasks. As Mr. Rogers said in any disaster, he said, "Look for the helpers. Look for the helpers." That is where the divine is operating. That is where God is working. And the third question is, what are your sources of meaning? And in the traditional religious views, there's four potential sources of meaning. One is scripture, one is tradition, the third is reason, and the fourth is experience. And all religions play around with those to different degrees. Now, of course, in Unitarian Universalism, we really look at interpreting our lived experience through the use of reason. But we also have a religious tradition that's very important to us. We cannot believe anything we want. We're a highly ethical religion. We're inclusive and ethical. I wanted to explore that idea of scripture. I often say during the new member ceremonies that Unitarian Universalists are people of the book, but we all have a different book. But what are those sacred texts that give your life meaning? Those texts that you go to when you're in a hard time in life, or the person that you were talking about who's on the verge of suicide, what are those things that get you through that life? It can be community, it can be friends, it can be family, but sometimes it is a sacred text. And I don't mean sacred that it needs to be religious, just something that gets you through the life. And I know one of my sacred texts is a story from the Buddhist tradition. And I've mentioned it here before, and it's about the young man who's been diagnosed with juvenile diabetes. And he's angry, and he reacts like a caged animal. But then he sees this image of the Buddha, and he feels calm. And he feels relaxed for the first time since his diagnosis, which was years ago. And then a knife comes and goes into the Buddha's heart. And he feels that same anger again. Of this knife in the Buddha's heart, like, why is life like this? Why is there so many things tearing us apart? And then he notices the response of the Buddha imperceptibly growing and growing and growing. And the heart of the Buddha grows and grows and grows, but the knife remains the same size until the Buddha grows so large that the knife is but a speck. It's still there, but it's but a speck. And I think that's, he realizes that that was the Buddha's response to life, to the knife, to grow in response to suffering. And that's one of the sacred texts, and that's one of the things that gives us meaning. There's no inherent meaning in suffering. It's not that we're punished by God. It's not that someone's out to get us. Most suffering is just misfortune. There's plenty of suffering because human beings behave badly. Don't get me wrong. But ultimately, how do we respond to that? Can we respond in our capacity for love? Can we respond in our capacity for caring? To grow like the Buddha, to grow our heart, to grow our capacity. That is a sacred text for me, and I ask each of you to explore. What is sacred for you? What gets you through the hard times? And then finally, what are your views on birth and death? And Viola Davis says that the two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you discover why you were born. The day you discover why you were born. And I think being born is miraculous. I think it's as close as we have. This life coming forth is that most miraculous event that most of us will experience. And death is a mystery. We are talking about miracles and mystery with life and with birth and death. But I think the religious question is that, why were we born? What is our purpose? What drives us? What drives us to get out of bed in the morning and inspires us to take action, loving, kind action? And what purpose do we have? And I'm not talking purpose in those reactive reptilian things of feeding ourselves and reproducing. What purpose through our sacred consciousness do we have in our lives? Not all of us will be parents. Not all of us will enjoy being parents. But what is the purpose that we choose to dedicate our lives to and inspires us to engage the world around us? Those, I believe, are all spiritual questions. So I invite each of you to reflect on those five questions. What is your belief around human nature? What is your belief around the sacred and divine? What do you believe is the meaning of your life? What were you born for? And what are your sources of meaning, including those sacred texts that get you through hard times? Those, I believe, are spiritual questions that can be enriching. And we explore those with curiosity and not judgment. And that is a sacred act, because I believe the spirit and I believe the soul animate the material body that we are. And I invite each of us to explore those questions today and the days ahead. I invite you to rise in body or spirit for our final hymn, hymn number 34, Though I May Speak with Bravest Fire. Thank you. invite you to reflect on the words of the third verse of that hymn. Come, Spirit, come, our hearts control, our spirits long to be made whole. Let inward love guide every deed, by this we worship and we are freed. Spirituality is how we make ourselves whole in a world that tears us apart. I invite you to reflect, what will make you whole today, the week ahead, the year ahead? There's much in the world that's tearing us apart. Find those sources, including this community, that bring us together. Go with love, go in love. Blessed be and amen.